is, what is Buddhism? What is it? A lot of us come to Dharma Punks and the meditation centers, and on the one hand, we're coming because we're stressed out or we're uncomfortable or we're looking for some kind of practice that will lend us some tranquility and peace of mind. But we all, I think, come to any spiritual center with a lot of concern, if not outright defensiveness, because we've all experienced the downside of religions. Certainly with fundamentalists and orthodox and born-again people, when you've met them, if you've had any experience like I have, born-again people and the religiously fundamentalist and the Tea Partiers and all that, they all have this sort of smug sort of underlying idea that the truth has just entered the room with me. That they know and you don't know, and if you're really nice, they'll tell you, but until you've seen the light like they have, you're in the dark and you're missing something, and they've got the truth. And it's no wonder that a lot of people take this path because if you look at some of the religious foundational principles that they've been taught, it sort of leads to this kind of presumptuousness. So many of the religions are founded on people standing on mountains with pieces of stone and lightning, shouting at the cowering masses, saying that unless you follow what I say, there's going to be a flood of biblical proportion, or there's going to be locusts, or horrible frogs will rain from the sky, insects will gnaw at you, terrible things, famines, God forbid what will happen to you unless you... There's this throughout a lot of the religious pamphlets and books, there's this sort of, you're being hammered away at, you're being threatened, unless you believe this, you're going to suffer. And the Buddha never did any of those things. He didn't appeal to any god. He didn't say that there's any god backing me up. He didn't tell anybody they would be punished if they didn't believe what he taught. He didn't threaten. He didn't walk around, in fact, preaching unless people would ask him, how do you find true happiness? And that was the only question that he would answer. What is the path to lasting happiness? When we look up what the definition of religion is, and I'm reading the definition from various sources, religion is a set of suppositions concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe. The Buddha didn't teach any of that. In fact, when the Buddha was asked, what is the cause, the nature, and the purpose of the universe, he answered, I'm not going to answer that, because that has nothing to do with what's going to bring you lasting peace of mind. Religions are often explained as the creation of a supernatural agency or agencies. In other words, gods. Buddha didn't do that either. Buddha didn't say there was any god that had anything to do with where the world came from. He didn't deny gods, but he didn't. And in fact, there's some of the later suttas have him talking to them, but he doesn't ask them for help. He doesn't ask them for power. The Buddha's not a god himself. In those passages, he's actually teaching the gods, because in the Buddhist suttas, the gods are kind of dumb, and they don't help people at all. Religion also involves devotions and ritual observances and contains codes governing the conduct of our affairs. There are a couple of holidays in the Buddhist practice. There's Vesak, which is coming up in 10 days, which is the Buddha's birthday. And the only way that people acknowledge that is generally by not eating afternoon and by practicing meditation that day. There's also Upata and the rains retreats that are followed by monks. And then again, the only thing that people do on those days is they don't eat afternoon and they just meditate a lot. That's pretty much it. There's very limited observances in Buddhism. In terms of rituals, once a year we do the string ceremony, where we take the those of us who are interested in taking the precepts of refraining from killing and stealing and lying. We simply pass a string around and give ourselves a necklace, and that's it. That's the only ritual that we do here. Unless you consider meditation to be a ritual, then, well, that counts too, I guess, but not really to me. So Buddhism doesn't fit under the definition of what a religion is by any extreme stretch. Some people put it in books called the world's greatest religions, but it doesn't fit because, again, it's not a theistic practice. It has no desire to explain the origins of the universe or what the nature of the universe is or what's going to happen. It doesn't presuppose gods or supernatural entities. It doesn't say that you have to believe it. It doesn't say that if you don't believe it, that any special suffering will be imposed on you. The Buddha believed that his path brought true happiness, but he would only teach it when people asked him directly, "What will I do will lead to my lasting peace of mind?" And then he would answer the question. He didn't go around, and as we'll see tonight as I talk about this famous teaching, he answered quite differently than most spiritual teachers did. Beliefs are psychological states in which an individual holds a certain idea to be absolutely true. As we'll see, that's not what Buddhism is either, because the Buddha did not ask us to believe in anything without testing it out for ourselves, without investigating and making sure it's true. There's no, in the Buddhist teaching, believe what I say because it's true, and don't question it. Don't test it out for yourself. A faith, however, is defined as something that we have trust in the truth or trustworthiness of a concept. In other words, we believe that a certain concept is helpful or useful. And that is what Buddhism most clearly, or I would say closely, falls under. It's a faith. It's a faith. When the Buddha, in the famous teaching by the Buddha, there was a group of people called the Kalamas, and the Kalamas came to the Buddha and they said, "Why should we believe you?" And the Buddha said, "Don't believe me." The Kalamas were people who had been taught by a lot of different teachers, and these teachers told them one thing after another, and the Buddha kept on saying, "Don't believe me." And he gave a famous answer that I think that I find to be one of the most important passages in all of his teachings. He says to them, "Of course you're uncertain, and of course you're in doubt. Don't go by the reports from others, by the stories you've heard, by your cultural traditions. Don't go by any religious scriptures. Don't even follow your common sense or your logic or your analogies or believe in just what's popular views. Don't even go by what seems to be most likely, because it happens most often. Or even the thought, I should believe this because that's a teacher and the teacher said I should believe that. The only thing you should believe is something that you have discerned or experienced for yourself. Only when you've discerned for yourself that these actions and these ideas are skillful that you should believe them, that when these qualities are unskillful that you shouldn't believe in them." So, in other words, the Buddha is saying we have to experience for ourselves what is true and what's not. If he simply sat and told you, "Don't do this, do that, don't do this, do that," like is practiced in so many other spiritual traditions, not all, but in many, that it leads to this sort of intellectual belief where you sort of say, well, then you have people who say they're like they're ardent Christians or Jews or Hindus, or they believe they're ardent Buddhists, and they, I really believe in this thing. But when push comes to shove, they're back, you know, suffering, eating a pint of ice cream and watching TV and in misery, because we haven't put into practice anything that we've experienced, because we haven't experienced anything. We haven't tested anything. The Buddha's saying the exact opposite. Don't believe him. Test everything. Focus on what your actions and your thoughts are and see what the long-term results are. See what actions of yours bring you long-term peace of mind, and see what actions of yours bring you long-term suffering. Now, the key there is long-term. Obviously, virtually the world is filled with things that bring short-term happiness. We could all go out on a field trip, buy a lot of crack, find some find some sex workers and a bottle of bourbon, a seedy hotel room, and a syringe, right? And then it would probably last you all a few hours, while all of your long-term self-esteem and peace of mind go to shreds, while absolutely nothing in the long term is solved for the good. The Buddha is talking about, see what actions, what thoughts lead to long-term happiness for you and for the people around you. Okay, so there's a couple of basic foundational ideas here that are assumptions that the Buddha goes on to explain. And again, feel free to test any of these. Don't believe me. Do not believe me. Doubt everything that I say. Okay? Please, do not believe a word I say. Put all of these to the test. The basic assumptions of karma, what the Buddha teaches, is number one, we have freedom of choice. We have free will. Nothing of importance has been predetermined for us. This is a big, important step. There was a lot of people during the Buddha's time that believed that everything was predetermined, that karma worked in one way, that all of your happiness or all of your suffering was determined in the past, and there's nothing you could do right now to change any of it. The Buddha said to that, not true. Not true. You can achieve happiness even if you've done unskillful things in the past. The past plays an effect or has some limits on the present, but it doesn't determine it. You have a role in determining your happiness right now and in the future by what you think and what you do, and you have freedom of choice. A lot of neuroscientists today don't believe in that. They believe that consciousness is a sham, that everything is determined by the brain unconsciously, and we're just consciously along for the ride. And they use the metaphor of a monkey on the back of an elephant, that the monkey thinks he's steering the elephant, but the elephant really, which is the body, is pretty much going where it wants, and the elephant is just narrating it. And that's what they say consciousness is, just us telling stories about why we did what we did, but we really didn't have any control. This is not agreed on by the majority of neuroscientists, and probably the debate was settled by a guy named Benjamin Libet, who was a famous neurologist, who showed that there is a role that consciousness plays, that consciousness allows us to override our bad ideas, that there is a place where consciousness has an agency. So there is a role that we do play, and it's a very important role. So the second important presupposition, besides the fact that we have freedom of choice, is that our choices matter, that we're not making decisions that don't matter in the long term. Now, this is very different than a lot of spiritual paths and a lot of other paths. For example, if we were fundamentalist Marxists, we would believe that no matter what our actions are, if we're still living in a capitalist society, alienated from the means of production, we don't have control over the factories, we're a bunch of alienated workers toiling away in pre-revolutionary times, that any happiness we would attain would be false consciousness happiness. That's what Marx said. That the happiness we achieve right now is false. It's the happiness of false consciousness. Then there is, of course, the people like Bowlby and Ainsworth, who were psychologists who studied infants, and they said that really what we do now doesn't matter that much because everything's been determined when we were infants. It's called attachment theory. And the idea is if you look at a way an infant, a baby, attaches and relates to its mother, you can determine the rest of that infant's life. Now, clinically, they were actually pretty eerie in how they could determine when people would be capable of being married and when they wouldn't. They could look at certain children, and within a 70% correctness, they could see an infant the way it bonds with its mother, and with 70% accuracy, they could predict whether that child would be able to be in a sustained marriage or not. Pretty depressing, right? I mean, that's fucked up. But anyway, but they did get it wrong 30% of the time. They did find out that people actually, a lot of the time, can break out of the most terrible bonding relationships with their parents and achieve happiness. So if you and your mother were as distant as China is from Brooklyn, don't worry about it. There's still a possibility of lasting happiness. Okay. No idea what I'm onto right now, but I'm just going with it, so just follow me along. Anyway, so our choices do matter. And finally, they do lead to it's our choices, our actions, and our thoughts that lead to our lasting happiness, our lasting peace of mind, or our suffering. Furthermore, the Buddha makes the distinction that if the thoughts and actions that are about not causing harm, that are about generosity, that are about compassion for others, that are about goodwill and appreciating our virtuous actions, that these kinds of thoughts lead to long-term peace of mind, whereas thoughts that derive from greed or hatred or extreme self-centeredness, these lead to suffering and stress in the long term. Now, I'm encouraging you again not to believe a single word I'm saying. I'm encouraging you to test it out. How? There's lots of different ways, especially during meditation. See what happens when a thought arises. What happens to your body? What happens in the long term to your mind? Does it feel spacious or does it feel claustrophobic? Do you feel more comfortable or do you feel more walled off? In the long term, when you have a day where you've been caught up in self-centeredness and worry, how do you feel later on in the days following? Versus a day where you focused on dedicating yourself to appreciating what you've got and feeling gratitude rather than living in all the things we wish we could have but don't. See what the long-term results of the thoughts and actions are. That's why concentration is so important, because we keep jumping around and we don't see the results of our actions. We don't learn. We don't learn what is causing our stress and what is causing us to find lasting peace. So it's important to have a sense of what's going on in your body so you can see the immediate results of whatever thought or attitude or view that you're holding is, and see how that view plays out. Very often when I'm caught up in worry about something financial or the future, I'll remember mindfully to go back into my body, find out what's going on with my stomach, and invariably my stomach is tight and my shoulders are scrunched up towards my ears and my mind begins to feel more and more claustrophobic. These are three instances. Hints that the results of what I'm thinking are not good. Are not good. I've noticed, though, every day when I practice goodwill, and I practice gratitude, that my mind feels more spacious and my body feels more relaxed. I feel more comfortable just in my own body. That kind of telltale response or reaction is what we should be looking for on a moment-by-moment basis. And then on a long-term basis, if you have a day where you've been feeling one way or the other, see how it plays out. Be people who experiment and learn from your own experience. Don't let me or anybody else tell you what's true. Your job is to find out what's true. My job is to look beautiful and stand up here and blather on. Boy, that was insane. All right. So a couple of other things before I close up. Another foundational principle is the desire for happiness is not a selfish thing. In other spiritual paths, we're told that the only way you can achieve everlasting salvation is at the whim of God, and that wishing for your own happiness is selfish, and it's a bad intention, and it will pave the way to nowhere good. The Buddha says quite the opposite. He says, since true lasting peace and happiness comes from within, there's nothing selfish about wishing to be happy. Because what you're wishing for doesn't take anything away from anybody else. Since it comes from within, it's never taking anything away from anybody else. That's true happiness. There's nothing selfish about it. So, in fact, if you're trying to be generous and compassionate and send goodwill to somebody else, but you don't believe that you deserve true happiness, there's something really hollow and empty and wrong about that. The Buddha doesn't believe that. The Buddha says that we can't compartmentalize the mind and have the mind say, well, I don't deserve happiness, but everybody else does. Or vice versa, that I deserve happiness because I've been such a victim and hard worker and lonely person, but all those other people, they don't deserve happiness. The moment we start walling off goodwill and saying only this person or only that person deserves it, the moment we start diminishing this intention, the moment we start undermining one of the true paths that will lead us to lasting peace. Because wishing people happiness is a profoundly powerful practice. Now you may say, there are so many terrible, terrible people out there. I've had to live with Dick Cheney for 8 years of my life, and there are other terrible people out there, and why should I wish for all beings to be happy? Remind yourself that none of this goodwill is wishing that these people will be wealthy or receive rewards or receive power. The only thing we're doing when we wish goodwill for others is we're asking that they be able to find true happiness within. I'm utterly convinced that if some of the more obnoxious people that have lived found true happiness within, rather than constantly try to hoard it and grab it from other people and exploit other people for it, that if we all believe that the true lasting peace of mind would come from our diligent spiritual practice, the world would be a profoundly better place than it is. So there's nothing unskillful about wishing true happiness and peace for all beings, because we're simply asking that people find that their lasting peace of mind is going to come from their relationship to their own experience, not by trying to hoard what's left of the outside material world. Lastly, it's important when you find a state of peace and happiness to keep on questioning it. to still see if you can find more peace, that you can find a greater sense of purpose in your life, to not simply settle. Because in my experience, there's always that each state that we reach of where we feel a sense of purpose in life and a sense of a good feeling about what we're doing, there's always a little bit more that we can investigate. This should never be seen as a destination so much as a journey that we take, that we try to see and practice in different ways how we can bring greater sense of inner calmness to ourselves and a greater sense of ease to our lives. The Buddha concluded this sutta that I've been teaching from by saying something wonderful, which is he said that you don't have to believe in rebirth for any of this to be true. He says, what have you experienced? Does greed appear in a person for their long-term benefit or harm? And people say, yes, it appears for their long-term harm. And then he goes on to show that you don't have to believe in an afterlife. You simply have to see that if you practice compassion and generosity, a sense of appreciation and goodwill and patience, that in the long term, you'll feel better, you'll feel more comfortable, and you won't have to worry about other people trying to get back from you the things that you've exploited or taken from them. It's actually a very, very sort of revolutionary path. The idea that we should focus trying to get our happiness not by exploiting or taking from others, but by just using what we need of the world as little as possible, just enough to be comfortable, but to turn that hoarding and that craving towards places that can answer that need for lasting peace and lasting happiness. And that's really working with our own thoughts, our own intentions, and our own body sensations within what we do with our meditation. So I hope that tonight's talk about what Buddhism is as a faith and how that plays out in the foundations of the practice is interesting or of some use to you. And now it's your turn to ask any questions or share anything you like, and including any questions about tonight's heady, hippie-ish meditation.
Yeah. What would you call it, a meditation?